Hey everyone, welcome to Garden Fork Radio. It's your host, Eric Rauchio here. I'm here with someone who I've become a big fan with, Sandor Katz, who's the author of the newest book is The Art of Fermentation. Hey man.
Hey, it's good to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
So you're kind of like me. You are someone who was from New York and then moved out of New York. I actually moved back. And I think there might be kind of a kindred thing there where when you left New York, you kind of discovered some amazing stuff, and you've really taken a run with it with this fermentation. How did it all come about? How did you all of a sudden start become the fermentation guy?
Well, I mean, I would certainly say that the roots of my interest in fermentation, developed during my childhood in New York City. I grew up on the Upper West Side. And, among the many fermented delicacies that my family enjoyed, I loved sour pickles.
All right.
What we in New York call sour pickles and most people outside of New York call kosher dill pickles. But these are fermented pickles that are preserved by lactic acid, which are really very distinct from the vinegar pickles that that are mostly what fill supermarket shelves. Vinegar is a product of fermentation.
Yeah.
But vinegar pickles are not directly fermented. So anyway, this was a distinctive flavor that I always loved, throughout my life in New York. I was not practicing fermentation. Nobody, in my family or my direct experience was practicing fermentation. And what it really took was when I left New York City, which was almost exactly 20 years ago, and moved down here to rural Tennessee, I started keeping a garden. And really, I was such a naive city kid that it didn't even occur to me that all of the cabbage would be ready at the same time and all of the radishes would be ready at the same time. When I was faced with this challenge, what to do with this fleeting abundance, I remembered how much I loved sour pickles and sauerkraut. Literally I just looked in the joy of cooking and, learned how to make sauerkraut. And then from there, I kind of got obsessed and, my life was such that, I had space in my life to indulge this obsession and people to feed. So I started playing around with, country winemaking, different fruit wines, making yogurt, a little bit of basic cheese making,
nice.
Sourdough. Then I branched out into tempeh and miso. Ever since I've just been trying to learn everything I could about fermentation, and also with an eye towards sharing it to people. The first time I ever was invited to teach about fermentation, which was in 1999. I taught a sauerkraut making workshop. But I learned that there is a terror, in our society. We all have been raised, in the context of what I call the war on bacteria. And we've been indoctrinated into the idea that bacteria are dangerous. Bacteria really are our enemies. And we should try to eradicate them. Which I think explains the success of products like, for instance, antibacterial soaps. There's nothing sexier you can write on a container that you're trying to sell to someone that kills 99.9% of bacteria, because we regard that as positive, when in fact there's really nothing worse we can do for ourselves or our health than continually wipe out the bacteria in and around our bodies. We need these bacteria in order to function effectively.
Oh, yeah.
So I got interested in, trying to demystify fermentation and empower people with confidence and skills to do this. Fermentation is so safe. Especially in the realm of fermenting raw vegetables, there never has been a single case of food poisoning documented in the United States from fermented vegetables. There are very few foods you can say that about. That means that fermented vegetables are safer than raw vegetables. Because every year there are outbreaks of, different foodborne illnesses related to raw. So fermentation is actually a strategy for safety.
That's amazing, because I was just thinking about the food poison that erupted from the tainted spinach from California. It's fresh, beautiful, raw spinach. But there you go. If we fermented the spinach, it'd be a little safer, probably.
I mean, every year we have outbreaks like that, and, you know, spinach, lettuce, tomatoes, one thing after another. You know, it reminds us that there always is the possibility of incidental contamination. I mean, typically the scenario is manure from a factory farm uphill washes over the vegetable field and results in some contamination. But yes, as you say, if you were to ferment those vegetables, you know, there's no way that the incidental contaminants survive the process. They would be overwhelmed by the indigenous lactic acid populations on the vegetables, and as the lactic acid developed, they would wipe out incidental contaminants. But by the way, let me just say that I'm not arguing against eating fresh vegetables. I mean, I think
vegetables.
You know, I'm just trying to help people realize that the fear of things fermented is an irrational fear, because the fermentation actually makes foods even safer. But we can't be crippled by fear. Just because there is the possibility of contamination is not a reason to not eat food.
I don't know if people realize this, but actually bread is a fermented food.
Absolutely. I mean, bread is fermented, cheese is fermented, coffee is fermented, you know, all of the condiments that we love to put on our food is fermented, chocolate is fermented, vanilla is fermented. I mean, you know, so many of, you know, our most basic staples and our, you know, most desirable treats are products of fermentation. If you walk into a gourmet food store and look around, you know, almost all of the foods that we elevate on this pedestal and describe as gourmet foods are products of fermentation. You know, all around the world, this is practiced in, you know, nearly infinite variations.
I'm working right now. I don't know if you're familiar with this bread book from the Tartine Bakery in San Francisco, but they're all about starting with your own starter to make a leaven. And I think the kind of generic term is a sourdough starter, which isn't exactly correct, I've learned. But you basically begin with some flour and water and your kitchen and your hands, and you let the flour, the wild yeast that are there and on your hands, start to basically grow. And I've got it in a yogurt container now, just a plastic container, and I've got this bubbling kind of alive thing that I've been baking bread with now, which is really cool.
Well, that is great. Well, I mean, I think that this just illustrates, I mean, the fact that, you know, simply moistening flour initiates a fermentation. So, you know, this gives us a little bit of insight into the inevitability of fermentation. You know, any food will ferment. You know, with dry foods, we need to introduce moisture because water is the most basic precondition, you know, for life. But really just adding water to flour or soaking a whole grain in water, you know, initiates a process of fermentation. And I have a starter like that that I have been, you know, that I have been feeding and caring for more than 10 years now. And although I rarely bake bread with it, I make pancakes all the time, several times a week. I make a kind of savory vegetable sourdough pancakes. They've just become a staple in my life, and I really love them.
One more reason to eat pancakes. I love pancakes. So if for the people listening, what would be a simple, easy way for them to start getting working with fermented foods, fermented vegetables?
I certainly would say that fermenting vegetables is the most straightforward way to begin.
Sorry.
I'll begin again.
Yeah, let me just turn off the phone. Sorry. Sorry about that. Okay, go ahead, sir.
I always recommend vegetable fermentation as the most straightforward way to begin a fermentation practice for a number of reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, vegetables are very common and easy to come by. You can use a jar that you already have in your pantry as a vessel. You don't need to go and buy some specialized equipment. You don't need any starter cultures. You see results relatively quickly within a few days. They're incredibly delicious, incredibly healthy. It's a very easy, like ritualistic habit to get into making this. So, so I think it's a great gateway into fermentation. Any kind of vegetables. The classic ones are, you know, cabbage or radishes, but you can also work with turnips, parsnips. You can mix vegetables together, embellish them with, you know, onions, garlic, ginger, any kind of seasoning you like. But the basic process is you chop up your vegetables finely or coarsely. It doesn't really matter. Lightly salt them. There's no magic number with salt. I typically don't measure the salt. You want it to taste good. So start by salting lightly. And then if you feel that it's necessary, add a little bit more salt. The commercial, artisanal commercial makers who I meet mostly work with 1.5% salt by weight. So once your vegetables are chopped and salted, get in there with your clean hands and just squeeze for a few minutes. Use a little bit of force. What you're trying to do is bruise the vegetables, break down cell walls, help the vegetables give up their juices. After several minutes of squeezing, the vegetables start to get really juicy. Once the vegetables are juicy, and you make sure that your salt and seasoning levels are to your liking, then stuff them into the jar that you have. Stuff them with a lot of force, force out any air pockets, and get the vegetable submerged under the liquid. It takes about 2 pounds of vegetables to fill a quart jar.
Okay.
1 pound for a pint. 8 pounds for a gallon. And then just once it's submerged under liquid, just leave it on the counter. If you put the lid on the jar, understand the pressure will build up in there and you'll need to loosen the top to let some air out. This isn't something you can just forget about.
Right.
And just taste it after a few days. And, you know, some people like it after a few days. Some people like it after a few weeks. Some people like to wait a few months. That, you know, warmer temperatures will make the process go faster. So, you know, the classic, you know, putting it away for the whole winter, you know, that depends on having an unheated cellar space. But you can certainly make it even in a tiny hot apartment. You just with a shorter fermentation period. And once it gets to be as strong, meaning as acidic, as tart as you want it to be, then you can move it to the fermentation slowing device that I presume all of your listeners have in their kitchens.
Yeah.
Refrigerator. You know, if not, then just, you know, eat it up and enjoy. You know, this is the whole process for vegetable fermentation. It's incredibly simple. The most likely problem you could encounter is mold growing on the surface. You're creating this environment to protect the vegetables from the air, but the surface is always a vulnerable place where, unless you have some kind of specialized engineered vessel, it will come into contact with the oxygen in the air, and you can get molds and yeast developing. And if you notice anything like that, which will be visible to you, you just scrape that away and enjoy what's underneath. Sauerkraut is incredibly easy. If you want more detailed information, check out my website, wildfermentation.com, or either of my books, Wild Fermentation or The Art of Fermentation. Lots more information about this process in those places.
Cool. And we'll, in this episode, we'll link to those, all those books as well. When I first started out, I was like, oh, I have to get the special crock, you know, to do the sauerkraut. Can I use a plastic or glass container, or should it, is it ideal the ceramic container?
Well, I think glass is every bit as good as ceramic. I mean, the issue is that, you know, glass contain, you know, it's hard to find a glass container beyond, you know, a gallon or But sure, I mean, I'm forever, you know, peeking in the houseware sections of thrift stores and, you know, seeing cookie jars or, you know, grain bins or different things that can work as fermentation vessels. But jars, particularly wide mouth jars, work really well. I mean, if you start doing this regularly, you know, or if you want to scale up and do larger amounts, I mean, a ceramic crock is a wonderful, wonderful tool. But, you know, in trying to highlight the simplicity of this, I mean, I want people to realize you don't need to go buy a special gadgetry to do this. You know, our ancestors have been doing this for literally thousands of years in pits in the ground. You know, the whole, the technology of pottery was developed in order to facilitate the fermentation arts. So, you know, there's all sorts of, you know, elegant vessels, you know, in different shapes that have evolved in different parts of the world. But yeah, I mean, absolutely, beautiful vessels are wonderful. But, you know, you can do this in the commonest of vessels that are already sitting in the pantry.
Cool. All right, so one more quick thing. My friend Brian told me about this, that you are working on a project there in Tennessee. Are you building a barn? Is there some sort of a project you have going on there?
Well, it's a little bit different than building a barn. I'm restoring an 1820s log cabin.
Ah.
So yeah, I mean, you know, it's involved a lot of gutting, rebuilding foundations, you know, it's been a pretty deep project, but, yeah, lots of people have been helping me. In June, I'll be hosting the second annual, Homestead Restoration and Fermentation Residency. You know, it's basically 4 weeks where, you know, we spend the mornings, you know, doing projects at this cabin that I'm restoring, and then we spend the afternoons doing fermentation projects.
I love it. Is there some information on your site about that? That people might be interested in that, I think.
Website about that.
Cool. All right, I want to thank you for taking your time here. I know you're kind of a busy guy, but I mean, fermentation is a big deal on Garden Fork, and people are in their cars right now driving to work listening to us, and they're going to go home now and want to make sauerkraut. So thanks for doing that.
Well, I'm so happy. If, you know, if one person decides they need to make a stop on their way home and get some vegetables and go home and chop them up and make sauerkraut, I will feel that I've accomplished something. Is that, you know, I teach, I mean, you know, you got the 2-minute condensed version of how to make sauerkraut, but I do teach workshops. I travel around quite a bit doing that, and then I also host more in-depth workshops here in Tennessee. So, you know, check out my website if you might be interested in, you know, some more in-depth educational experience.
Yeah, I forgot to mention that, but on the left-hand side of your website, you're going to be in California, then British Columbia, and then Singapore.
Yeah, very exciting.
Cool. All right, everyone. So, wildfermentation.com. Thanks a lot, sir.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from uniquetracks.com.